Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Indie Comic Spotlight Special Edition. This is the only time you'll hear my voice this episode, as once again, my friend Heath is doing a hostile takeover to interview writer of the Palomino series, Stefan Franck. And I'm sure I'm saying it wrong because I'm the worst. So, you know what you should do? Listen to the episode. Heath and Stefan talking stuff. Good times.
Welcome to another guest spot from Heath Fedor here on Indie Comics Spotlight from Comics in Motion Network. I'm joined once again by Stefan Franck, who's we're going to be talking about his new Kickstarter on Volume 2 of Palomino. So, hello, Stefan.
Just a little correction.
Am I saying it wrong?
Huh? No. Just this time around, it's like the latest thing that's happening is the second hardcover of Silver that's coming out.
Oh, okay. So it's the second hardcover of Silver. I mean, is Palomino still? Is the Kickstarter still going on? Or
no, that's done. That's been done for a while. So okay. It's like sorry, I should have refreshed you before we start. You know, but it's so basically we're doing the new silver hardcover with Abrams Comic Arts, and the second one is coming out. It just came out this week.
Oh, okay.
I'm actually gonna get them just in case.
Yeah, so Stefan's gonna go grab the silver hardcover, but
here we go.
I'm on board. So yeah, Silver Book 2. So I'm not as familiar with that as Palomino, but like I said, I'm on board with whatever you have. So can you give me a little bit of background on that?
Of course. And by the way, I'm also down to talk about Palomino because people can still get it anytime. But so Silver is a world that is inspired by the world of Bram Stoker's Dracula. And we are 40 years later into the noir pulp era of the 1930s. And you have this group of con men who team up with this woman who's a vampire hunter. And together they try to steal this precious silver that's hidden in a castle full of vampires.
Oh, nice.
Right.
That sounds awesome.
What could possibly go wrong, you know?
Awesome. So, how did the Kickstarter go for Palomino? Just to backtrack just for a second.
No, that's it went great. We get funded, you know, like well over what we asked for, and it was pretty great.
Right, yeah, I do love that. That book. For anybody, you know, who wants a really good, I saw another podcaster who interviewed you had called it country noir, which I think is really cool.
That's
the really cool title for that. And so are the similarities in the two works as far as tone, or are they just complete? I mean, that's an earlier project, correct?
Right. So like I think the similarities between the two, because yes, so you know, so Silver is a big, it's broader, it's a big pulp adventure. So it's kind of pulp noir, kind of, you know, Ocean's 11 in Dracula's castle by way of Indiana Jones, you know. So it is that kind of noir pulp era of the 30s, right? And Palomino is like a neo noir. We're in 1980s in LA, so it's obviously a very different voice, a very different tone. But I think the noir sort of link between the two, and that's what I love about noir, is that to me it's about characters who you know, appear to be very hard, but that's just their skin, you know?
Yeah.
That thin, hard shell around them. And the reason they wear that is because inside they're actually hypersensitive people who have this really like burning sense of justice and right and wrong, and they should know better by now, but they can't help themselves but getting involved one way or the other in a way that they know is not the easy way for them to go. And that's how they get in trouble. And so I think like noir, to me, noir in all its forms somehow is it's about that. It's about that sort of existential sort of it's finding your moral compass in a world that is somewhat immoral or somewhat murky, and against your better judgment, you find
Yeah.
your true north,
I mean, in this day and age, you can't really do a good versus evil story, but it seems like, for me at least, as a noir junkie, that it's a way to navigate good and evil like you were saying, with a character who has a soft inside. Now, one like I don't know, craft question is, did you find occupying these characters in your imagination, did you find some of them a little bit, hard to live with, I guess, in your head or when you're writing, and be kind of thankful to go to something a little more lighthearted, maybe, with your animation work? I don't know. I found that myself writing a noir character, it was like, I really like this guy, but I don't want him in my head all the time. So I don't know. Was that similar to you? Because I'm noticing, in Palomino, your characters have this, they've got the soft side that you show very quickly, so it's easy to relate, and it's easy to be like, okay, this guy's a good father, or this, there's these sides that you're showing really quickly. But I mean, if you're not showing those cards, I mean, I don't know, how was it for you? Was it tough
No, it's
sometimes to have
interesting.
these?
Like for me, it's funny because like it starts, there's always like a high concept, behind the series, something you can pitch in like 2 seconds, and I have a lot of different high concepts for a lot of different and they, different time periods, different genres, whatever, but they really don't go anywhere until I kind of find my way into the characters, and one day I kind of wake up and I go like, oh shit, I know what this is. I know who this guy is. I've suddenly just become so clear to me what this is really about, not just as a concept or the cleverness of it, but you're like, who are these people? Who are they? Right. And the minute I see it, then I'm really able to get into it. And then, yes, you become, and at that point, it's just you're the character, and it's just like there's no real sort of intellectual sort of like, what should they do? Should they do this? It's just like, you just know. I mean, or you just go with it. It just kind of tells you where it wants to go. And yeah, I have to say, there's certain moments in the stories where it does kind of catch me emotionally, but that, I don't find it burdensome. I think if I was doing something like super, super heavy, then maybe it would. But like to the extent of these characters are concerned, there's enough of a light inside of them that it still feels existentially sort of that it's not cratering,
I had this Comics in Motion has Sonic Salon, a little plug, but it's like, I know I mentioned it last time we spoke, but it's kind of a collective of poets and published authors, non-published. I've been somewhat published, but I wrote this, and I read this story about a spy, basically a spy in 1957, in Las Vegas, and it was really interesting to occupy his head, but it was first person, and I didn't want to. People were like, "Oh, friends of mine are like, hey, when's the next story coming out?" And I'm like, I can't get in this guy's head this long, just because it's a very, really bad character. The stuff I'm working on now, I have a short story that I'm thinking about turning into a book, just because I don't want to let go of those characters. And it's like you said, like, one of my favorite authors is Ari Salvatore, and he does a Drizzt Books and Fantasy, and he'll write an outline, give it to his editor to make him happy, and then he'll throw the outline out. He says, "I just listen to the characters." So I think
That's
it's
right.
kind of what you touched on, is you know these characters, and they tell you what the story, what's going to happen in the story. So again, that was another question I was going to ask about your process. Is it, do you do a lot of outlining, or does it, because it feels like with the dates and like in Palomino, I mean in Silver,
Right.
was there a lot of outlining? Because I mean, I never used to outline, and then I never could really write because you don't have a roadmap. It's just like Jin dropped in
Right.
the middle of a desert. And I don't know how Stephen King does it, but he's Stephen King. He doesn't outline. But
Yeah.
do you outline extensively or take
So,
notes?
right. So, like different stories like require different level of preparation, you know. Like so Silver, it is a big heist, you know. Like I said, it's a Ocean's 11 in Dracula's castle, right? So everything in the story is a fake out, or you know, it's just like, so you th this is the type of story you really need to know exactly how, you know, everything along the way or close enough. Because all those things that are gonna, all those cards that you're gonna flip at some point, you need to put them on the table and pass them for something else and stuff like that. So, like a big sort of con job, like there's a meta aspect where the book itself is a con on the reader, the same way that the characters are, pulling cons on other characters and so on and so forth. So for that, yeah, there's no way. You have to fully write it so you know every trick, every card that you're gonna flip. You gotta know, need to know what's under it, and so on and so forth. For something like Palomino, which is a lot more slice of life, I do write scripts, obviously, but I write them by volume. So like I know where the like you know. Before I started, I kind of, I knew what the big mystery was and what the big final answer is for, you know, certain things and stuff like that. But once I knew that, then I would go to volume one and I write volume one and I draw it and and it comes out and stuff like that. And then only then do I really full on go into volume two. And so I didn't outline or beat out the entire series because. Palomino is a lot more slice of life. You know, it's a noir mystery. You know, it's like an LA kind of, you know, I think of it as like To Live and Die in LA because of the 80s vibe, you know, those type of movies. But it's also by way of an Altman father-daughter, by way of Paper Moon almost, you know what I mean? So it's when you do a story like that, like the tone and the pace of it kind of takes over and it needs to, and you can't rush it. So it feels like if you beat everything out, you're always going to cram too much into it. And then when you actually try to execute it, that's when you realize that, okay, this needs a lot more air in it. You know what I mean? Because right now it feels too ooh.
I mean, there's a website called the batmanuniverse.net that I've been starting to review Batman comics. And I've read from different years, but I've noticed that the way I know a lot of modern writers write for the trade. And so you get this like puzzle piece, but I'm coming in. It's an interesting experiment because I'm coming into the middle of these long series and I don't really know what's going on. I know very little because I don't have I haven't read the issues before. But what I've noticed is just that how tight your plotting is and how, almost airtight that it's just tight and it's not, there's no fluff, there's no fat on the story. And it's really impressive because
Oh, thank you.
it seems like modern comics want to either write for the trade or take something that sometimes in the 60s was an issue of plot and then they stretch it out and then it's a problem in modern comics, I think. But
No,
no,
the thing that
it
I'm trying to No, I'm, yeah, I'm with you. You know, the thing that I'm trying to do, because sometimes you see it, you know, especially if it's a in the captions, in the voiceover, not so much the dialogue, but the voiceover, where sometimes it's very easy for a writer to start really liking the sound of their own voice in the voiceover, you know, and you read it and you're like, no, you already said that like 2 pages ago. No, I know. You know what I mean? Like, no, you just, we know this. You know what I mean? And so I'm really trying to never be redundant, but at the same time, you know, there's a lot going on in those stories. So it's you gotta hold the hand of the reader so that they don't get lost, you know, so you need to be there, you know, but in a way that never feels like, you know, these are, you know, you're just writing for the sake of writing and it's just more words and so on and so forth. Or the thing that I hate the most is if it's like, you know, you're just trying to slow the read, you know, so that people stay longer on the page. You need to find other ways to do it. You know what I mean? Like, you need to control the pacing of the read. That's very important. But I really try to do it without anything that feels artificial or just added on just for the sake of. So I am just trying to stay to make the moments play, right? To have the dialogue feel natural. If their voiceover, which there is voiceover in Silver, there's no voiceover in Palomino, to make it sound like it's not the voice of the author who's now on a soapbox. You know, I'm just trying to stay away from that, you know.
Have you using the same editor on all of your projects, or I noticed.
Yes, so Jeff Marsick was the original editor on Silver, the original edition that we published under Dark Planet Comics, and then he's also the editor on Palomino. And then once we went to Abrams for the hardcover, I started working with with Jodie Mosley, who's my wonderful, wonderful editor there, and she's also fantastic. And she brought some fresh eye to the thing, and just it was just pretty fantastic.
That's awesome, because I think that's what I've noticed. I'm almost 50, and I've been reading comics since the 80s. And I don't know if you were ever reading the Batman titles in the 90s when Denny O'Neil was the group editor. But he was not only keeping all the trains running, but he was grooming other editors, and you can really see how it's the lack of edit. Lack of editing. I mean, I listen to a lot of podcasts where they're reviewing new comics, and there's always these discrepancies, or the voices don't feel right. It's just, in your case, as the artist and the writer, those have always been, the last 30 years, my favorite projects, because you don't have exterior voices, you don't have, up the line, interfering. So, I mean, like Terry Moore's and my wife, who reads comics too. It's funny because I read superhero stuff, and I read like everything, but she only reads like horror comics or independent comics, or she's read a lot of Ed Brubaker and like The Fade Out and stuff like that. So it's interesting for me talking to her, because there's this stuff I won't even bring up to her, because she's just not interested in it. But she's, it's like Terry Moore, like, just has Parker Girls coming out. I mean, I don't know if you've ever read Strangers in Paradise, but it's this, he's finally going back and talking about this organization that's been in the background of his stories for 30 years. And it's just, yeah, it's like my heart's always with you guys who are writers and artists. And I just wish that I could have had that gene to draw. But
Well, to me,
yeah.
it's like, you know, sometimes it's like, you know, it's like in movies, sometimes they say certain movies, the star is not the star, the concept is the star, the character, you know what I mean? Or the, you know, whatever, you know? And I think it's true in comics too, where, you know, like, I'm interested in doing the kind of stories that it's not about necessarily advancing like a, you know, a major sort of universal sort of you know, storylines. You know, I'm, you know, I'm more into who are these people, And do I care about these people? Why do I care about these people? Do they feel real? Do they feel true to like actual people? And you know, for all the characters, the good guys, the bad guys, you know, and stuff like that, it's just like everybody's got their own conflict and their own thing, and you know, and it's just there. I'm really looking for natural, you know. It's just that the dialogue is natural, that it feels like, no, I know this person. It feels true. It doesn't feel like I'm either trying to shoehorn some exposition through it, or that it doesn't, you know, like a word salad that no one in real life would ever say. You know, I'm really chasing that natural quality that I think that's when you start to believe the characters, in the characters as people, you know.
Now, when you have a when you have like Bram Stoker's, like characters like from Bram Stoker, or you're dipping into these older concepts, do you feel the urge to just start doing like a modern deconstruction of them right away? Like, okay, this is the perception of how it was in the 30s, but now, I don't know if you ever read Sandman Mystery Theater, which I think was one of the best Vertigo comics, but it was it took place in the 30s and leading up to World War II, and it was a superhero in quotes story, but it was kind of showing all the I mean, are you peeling back a little bit of like this is the time period, or is it, I mean, is it a deconstruction of the concepts, or is it high adventure with some of that stuff sprinkled through?
Well, you know, whatever it is, it's not like a cynical, like, let's take another look at this shit. You know what I mean? It's not that. You know what I mean? It's not too, you know, there was a very big genre, you know, like, it's what I call the Shrek of it, you know, where they start to say, well, let's take another look at those fairy tales, you know, and then you start deconstructing and you know, and having, you know. And so I think that's, you know, really fun and everything, but that's not what I'm doing. I'm just really trying to tell, you know, really earnest on, I mean, not to say earnest for the wrong word, but my approach is earnest, but tell honest stories, you know. And what's like Dracula, for instance, in Silver, I've always wanted to do a take on Dracula, you know. And I think where and I think, you know, whether, like, to me, the thing that's important is whether we do stories about aliens, robots, you know, talking apes, whatever we do, in reality, they're metaphors for people, right? And it's just we do books about people for people, you know, that's, you know. And so, but the thing is, and this is where, like, the modern versus, you know, like, where the time period comes into play, which is that. I think the same concepts or plot devices, or you know, can be used at different time in history, can be used to talk about what's eating people at that particular time, you know. And I think, for instance, when Dracula was written originally, it was the Victorian era, so it was a very repressed area, like the sexual repression of it, and so on and so forth. So they were really using the concept of Dracula, and you know, the transgression of it and stuff like that was, you know, to talk about the thing that was really the issue at the time, which was that sort of like very repressed society, you know. I think in this day and age, although it seems like some days it feels like we're going backwards, but still, but all in all, that is not the issue that is universally, you know, felt. I think today, the thing I always said about Silver is it's about the central question. Once you go past all the insane action, all the suspense, all the fun, all the humor, all the circus of it, because it's all there. When you go down to the theater of it, you know, I think the central question is, what is it that makes you feel alive? You know, is it to have a lot of shit, you know, or is it to cheat death for 5,000 years and walk the earth, and you know? Yeah, you're not dead, but are you undead or are you unliving? Are you actually living? You know, and same for the human characters, right? Like one guy is this con man, you know, so you know he's in this very sort of talk about a noir character, you know, he's hiding behind this very predatory kind of approach that he has to people, you know. So it's so he's in a way a vampire, you know, as a con man, you know, because that's the only way that he can relate to people. There's no productive engagement on the emotional level until he starts to get a little too close to all these characters in these stories, and then kind of you know he, you know the shell starts to break and so on and so forth. But so so I think the question of this sense that we're living in a world that is somewhat broken, I mean more than not, you know, and some so in some ways broken, in some ways doesn't make sense, in some way feels completely immoral, you know, and you have to ask yourself how to find meaning and happiness and purpose and relevance and joy and everything in a broken world, yet engaging with it, not hiding from it, you know. And I think that to me is the you know, and do I feel, am I, you know, what's this feel? Am I feeling fully alive? Am I present for it, or am I just this walking dead, you know? So, you know, I think that's what everybody's sort of that's the general state of the world. I think that's the general anxiety that's floating around. And so to use the concept of the undead and you know the eternal guy who's been, you know, I think so it's modern, so it's timeless in the fact that the human condition, you know, goes by ebbs and flows but hasn't changed since ever, you know. So it's not like it's a ooh, what does the modern people have to say about it? It's not that, you know, it's more, it's, but it's just another take on it that is based on how we're, whatever frequency we're all kind of vibing on at this particular moment, you know.
Well, that's what I was just talking to my wife about a little while ago, was how science fiction, fantasy, speculative fiction, genre fiction is its best, at its best, when it's talking about the current world, but in a way that is indistinguishable from its own fantasy worlds. I mean, that's what the new wave of science fiction writers, that's what all the best stuff that I love is, it's talking about the human condition in a way that I can't just go on a soapbox somewhere and start talking about it, you know, especially these days where, you know, there's protests and people are fighting on one side or the other, you know, on different events in the world. But yeah, coming out of the pandemic and coming out of all these things, it's interesting, because, like, I mean, I was alluding to earlier, is just that how, like, Watchmen comes out and there's this urge to just deconstruct and then make it dark and gritty. And then we've been, you know, it's like every time we try to get out of, you know, superheroes try to get out of that, it gets brought back down, or they try to be more progressive. There's, I guess what I realize is that I thought that speculative, you know, like comic book fans or fans of science fiction, because of the ideas, weren't missing the point, but I guess they were, because it seems like they don't un like the characters that they love would not even want to be in the same room as them, and it's more and more prevalent. And it's like, well, I just don't understand how conservative, and, you know, it's like you're getting the same thing over and over and over again, and that's what a lot 90% of what fans want. But there is that whole, like, I can go into a comic shop and there's certain comic shops where you can't find the superhero comics. And I love that. I just love that, because I mean, I brought my wife into comic shops and the co-owners would be like, okay, have you tried this? Have you tried, you know, Saga? Have you tried this? And, you know, and it's great, because she's kind of that reader that doesn't care about, you know, and it's like, it's not, superheroes are not comics, and it drives me nuts, because It's like saying, Sports Illustrated are magazines. Like, no, it's a type of magazine, but I see so many IPs are becoming movies and TV shows, and then it's like, well, you need to make an, you should make a comic, and then automatically, like I wasn't even going to ask you about that sort of thing. I mean, if you wanted to, if something was happening with your work, but I know that I know of creators who just like, no, this is a comic. The reason why Alan Moore doesn't want his stuff to be made into movies because it says it's supposed just supposed to be a comic. And
Right.
but no, I mean, I was kind of wanting to touch on that too, is the life of a comic book creator these days. I mean, my perception of it is probably like most people that, can one make just your living off of comic books? I don't think if I were given like a even a mainstream comic title to write that I could make a living off of it. I think we're kind of at that point. I mean, I don't know. You would probably know more than me, but
So you've touched on a lot of really, really interesting
yeah,
things.
so
So I'm
there's
gonna
like
sort of
a
try to hit on some of them, and if I miss something, just remind me, and I'll go back to
Yeah,
that.
I'm about just went on a tangent. Sorry. Yeah,
No, it's great. I mean, I was totally following you over there. Like, yeah, I was following your thread. But you did hit on a lot of really interesting points. On the superhero thing, well, for I mean, I do love superheroes, right? I mean, I grew up with them, and I loved their deconstruction by Alan Moore, and others. Like, for example, I love Black Hammer, which is
oh,
a great
Black Hammer's
deconstruction
great.
of superheroes for the time being. So this is all great, right? And like myself, I worked on What If, the TV
Yeah.
show. I was very involved in it, and so I love, I mean, there was days where I just could not believe that I had the good fortune to be able to steering a little bit the imaginary lives of these characters that I grew up with and that I have always loved. But even when you do that, always, like, the question that we are always asking ourselves is like, but who are these people and why do we care, right? And it's
Yeah.
just all telling like that human story and understanding that all those bigger than life characters that are just metaphors for us, right? So as long as you do that, then you can have all the fun you want with anything you want. That's great. So that's my kind of position on that, as far as but that being said, I also agree with you that comics is a medium, it's not a genre, and it comes in all forms, it comes in floppies, it comes in big books, it's just like whatever, it's all good, and I think whenever somebody goes and buy a superhero book, and it have nothing to do with it and whatever, and I see, like, for instance, yesterday, I was doing a signing at a store that I really love here in LA, called Collector's Paradise. They have three different stores, so, and I was in the one in the Valley, and there's people who come in and who have already some of my books and they want the new ones. There's people who don't know about my books and they take a look and they go, oh, that's cool, and I want to, and they get into it. And there's people who come in and they're like, no, I'm just for the superhero stuff. And you know what, that's fine with me, because at the end of the day, here's what I always say about people, because like some people just like say, oh, I'm so sorry, I don't do this right, and I don't do, I you know, like I should be reading this, I should be doing that, I should be buying this or that. And I was just like, just take a step back. We're not doing this. Like, I'm not doing books to stress anybody out. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I'm not doing books to make anybody feel like they're doing what they shouldn't or should be doing what they should or whatever. It's just like, this is all for us to enjoy. You know what I mean? So
Yeah.
if it's your thing, then I'm so happy. If you find yourself in something else, and then I'm so happy for you, and I'm happy that we're engaged in this process of reading stuff, that has good stories, whether it's about people with capes or whether it's something in the more grounded world, it doesn't matter, and so, like, the thing that I love about the whole process of comics is the conventions,
Yeah.
because with the conventions we get to travel, so much, and go to different places, completely different places, crisscross the country, and just go to blue states, red states, purple states,
Yeah.
whatever states, and then you realize that, once people get off the big soapbox of the, really, everybody's kind of, we all kind of want the same thing, we just want to make a living, to our families to do well, to, is everybody's the fucking same, you know what I mean? And
Yeah.
so, and what I love about a comic shop or a convention or a movie theater or whatever is that that's a place where people who, that's, those are the only places left. Maybe with also sports arenas or whatever, but these are the only places left where anybody can come in and share a
Yeah.
moment, no questions asked. You know
That's
what I
what I
mean?
felt like one of the last couple of conventions I went to. I was like, this is just awesome. Like, 'cause these are all people that are like me, who just, it's just the love of it. I couldn't believe how massive it was. I mean, I guess this idea of like superhero fatigue is a nice little bite word, sound bite word these days, but it's not story fatigue, It's not, I mean, ultimately you're a storyteller, whether you're in What If or you're doing Palomino in it. And to the fact that you can do these works that are, that are your own and you have all the direction to, is very, very cool. And that you can work on the Marvel stuff too. But I just don't, I think there's too much pressure now because there's been this long run of success. It's just, I mean, if people are tired, they're tired. But you can look at countless shows and countless movies and TV series, and they're coming from comics. They're coming from novels, but lots of them are coming from comics. And to the point where I used to be up on these things, and now I'm like, "Well, that was a comic. Well, that's cool. That makes sense. Like, the structure of it would make sense. Like, okay, this is a comic." But yeah, it's something I'm always gonna love, but I'm never gonna understand. I mean, I just don't understand the world these days, but that's a whole other topic. It's just the vitriol and the anger towards progressive issues, and it's like it's always been that way. Stan Lee and Jack Kirby were being political as much as they could with the Comics Code Authority. I mean, when you had those restrictions, think about how much things were created during those restrictions of the Comics Code Authority, where you couldn't even show blood or that huge list of things. But no, it's
No, the
I
X-Men were always misfits. I mean, all these characters were always misfits, in their own way, but to be honest with you, I don't know how much of that toxicity is manufactured versus really coming from the fans. You know what I mean? Like, whenever people descend on a book, and say, this book, blah blah blah, you're ruining my childhood, blah 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 blah, right? It's just like, how many of these people are real people versus some sort of bots, and even of those real people, how many of them actually even read comics in the first place, right? So I'm sure some do, but I'm sure many don't, and I think that the toxification of of fan culture in the last 10 years is not by chance, it's because, as I was saying, this work, right, is where we can still get along, share, common love of story, of characters and stuff like that. Like the debate, what is storytelling? What is a story? A story is walking through somebody else's shoes. When you read a story, that's what you're doing. For whatever time you're immersed in the book, in the movie, or whatever, you're seeing the world from somebody else's point of view. Somebody completely different from you. It could be a mafia person, it could be like Tony Soprano, it could be an alien, it could be a superhero, it could be a serial killer. It doesn't matter. The point is, for some amount of time, you're getting outside of your own head and you're surrendering yourself to sharing like the human condition with somebody else who is not you. And that alone, that act alone is, that's the cure to everything, right? And so I think in a sort of way that whoever is trying to deconstruct everything, of course, they're going to attack this process because it is a process that is the antidote to totalitarianism, to whatever you want, to hate, to whatever, because you cannot hate somebody. You know what I mean? Like I think the danger, like the that's what I was saying earlier, right? Like when I was saying it's like it's all about people. Who are these characters? Do I believe them as people? The minute you humanize characters or people, then you can't kill them, you can't hurt them because they're human, but the minute you dehumanize, that's where now you can do anything because they're not human, so you're liable to do whatever bullshit, and so storytelling is the act of humanizing and sharing the common human experience and stuff like that. And so that's why, to me, it's always has been and always will be under attack because it's dangerous for whoever doesn't mean well.
Yeah, I think that, I mean, I look back on the last 30 years and I just think that my wife would ask me, like, well, do you ever feel a sense of validation because of how comics are now? And I'm like, well, yeah, because, 30 years ago, we were looked at as like outcasts in school. And, it was not a cool thing to be. It was not a cool thing for an adult to be, reading a comic book. But I was reading, Justice League of America with Giffen and DeMatteis, and I was reading all the Vertigo stuff. So to see Sandman on Netflix is just wild, and it's really, really good. And it's that kind of, that's growing up, that was the only job I wanted, to work for Vertigo. Like, that was it. I mean, I would send in little submissions and stuff, but no, I mean, I write, and I'm a writer, and I create, and it's what keeps me sane. I don't go to therapy, I write. So it's like, and I don't have much published, but it doesn't matter because it's I'm beyond that point of where I used to be. If you're failing at something or you're not successful at something, it seems like there's some time limit on it. Like I said, I got 50, I'm 49, and 50 is rolling towards me, but I don't feel like it's a time limit that you have to have this by this age or you have to have this published. It's just, I just love the characters and I'm in service of the story. I guess that's been my motto the last, 3 or 4
Did you
years,
know
is just.
that? Well, first, I agree with you 100%. But B, did you know that Raymond Chandler's didn't get published until he was 49 years old?
Yeah, 40. Yeah, Raymond Chandler. My favorite Raymond Chandler quote is he said that LA had as much personality as a paper cup. Oh, all right. So I don't want to take up too much of your time, but where can people go to for this? It's on Kickstarter.com, I would say.
So no, actually, we're past the Kickstarters at this
Oh, we
point.
are.
So we have the second silver book, and I'm Oh, I thought I had the first one handy, but I guess I don't. So I'm just showing you the second one. It's a really nice, cool book. And the beauty of it is that when you have those two hardcovers, you have the complete story. So you have the full arc. It fully wraps up, keeps you guessing until the very end. And so that book, you can get it anywhere books are sold, basically anywhere, like from your local comic shop to Barnes and Nobles. I'm gonna plug in a particular comic shop, which is Collector's Paradise in LA, but they ship all around the world, and they have this really cool signature series. And I was just there last night, and I signed a bunch of books for them.
Nice.
So if people want to order like a signed copy by me, they can order it as long as as long as they last. I mean, I didn't sign a million of them, so that they have I don't know exactly, but a few. So that there's that. But yes, silver is sold anywhere or everywhere books are sold. And then Palomino at this moment is we're publishing it through Dark Planet Comics, so you can only get it at, well, actually there are several places you can get it from. But you can also get it from Collector's Paradise because I also signed some of those books for them. They have it in their signature series. But you can also get it from our website, which is darkplanetcomics.com, and you can get anything you want from there. And of course, you can also come and find me at a comic book convention, which I don't think we're doing anymore until the end of the year. I think it starts again next year. But so darkplanetcomics.com. Anywhere books are sold, and Collector's Paradise right now have a little stash of books that are signed that people can order anywhere in the world.
And if people need to find you online, where can they find you?
Yeah, they can find me on Instagram or Facebook, but and then yes, go to the website darkplanetcomics.com. You can even sign in to the we have a newsletter that is not doesn't come out of. We only use it to let people know where new stuff is coming, so you will not get bombarded with but it's good that way you know when the books are coming out.
Awesome. Well, yeah. Everybody should go out and buy all of his books because I think they're just awesome. They're if you're tired of, I was experiencing a bit of burnout by reading superhero stuff lately, and his books are a breath of fresh air in the medium. So run out and get those, everybody. So we're gonna wrap this up. My name's Heath Fedor. If you want to see me on Instagram, I'm an HB Fedor, all lowercase, and Heath Fedor on Facebook. You can read my reviews on the batmanuniverse.net, and yeah. Well, thanks for joining me. And I'll talk to you hopefully next time you have another volume coming out.
Yeah,
I'd
for
love to talk to
sure.
you
Yeah,
again.
yeah.
All right, thanks for doing this.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.